Lights, camera, action.
The stage is set for the 2019 lineup of shows coming to the Red House Arts Center in downtown Syracuse.
And while we know the list of productions for the coming year, it's time to get a better understanding of the method behind the madness.
And to do that, we sit down with Hunter Foster, the new artistic director at the Red House Arts Center. That's coming up this week on the 315.
On-demand audio from WAER is made possible by contributions from listeners like you. To give or to find more information, visit our website, waer.org. Welcome to the 315. I'm Kevin Kloss.
And I'm Joe Lee. Recently, the Red House Arts Center announced its schedule of productions for the 2019 season, and it's fantastic.
But rather than listen to us two babble mindlessly about the lineup, we thought it might be better just to go right to the source. So we're happy to have with us on the 315 today, Hunter Foster, new artistic director at the Red House Arts Center. Hunter, thanks so much for stopping by and talking a little bit about what you guys have coming up in the coming year.
Great. Thanks for having me.
Welcome to Syracuse.
Oh, thanks. Thank you. And it seems like it's a perfect Syracuse day. Snowy and cold.
Yeah.
And gray.
Yeah, exactly, this time of year. Now, where are you coming from?
I've lived in New York City for 27 years, but I grew up in Georgia, so okay. I grew up in the South, and we saw snow maybe twice my entire life, and then I moved to New York City. I take that back. I actually went to school at the University of Michigan, so I did experience some winter there. We're going to New York City.
Brand new artistic director at the Red House. What was it about the Red House that got you excited about the position?
Well, I've been an actor and director for 27 years in New York City and wanted to find an artistic director position. That was a dream of mine. And I sort of was looking for sort of the perfect place. There are many factors. The proximity to New York City, obviously. My wife's from Rochester, so there was some family. We wanted to be. We felt like it would be the sort of perfect place between New York City and Rochester. And then the sort of thing put over the top for me was the facility itself. You know, it's 44,000 square feet of theater space. Everything is state of the art. It's right downtown in the middle of Syracuse, and it just seemed like it was sort of the perfect place to sort of take this theater and build it into something even bigger and greater than what it's been. It was sort of like it feels like a blank slate in a way. So that was the real sort of selling point. And then sort of spending time in Syracuse and getting to know the community was another factor, because I really sort of have enjoyed my time here and getting to know the people here and how nice and welcoming they've been. So.
Kevin, before you get started, I guess in the interest of full disclosure, I am on the board of directors for the Red House, so we should put that out there.
Hunter, you mentioned the facility. When we think about the facility inside specifically, there's a lot of different ways that space can be used. It can kind of be flipped to have a couple of different orientations. Is that something for you that's exciting as an artistic director to have that open availability?
Yeah. I mean, as a director, I've always... I always loved immersive theater, so I've always loved being able to sort of change configurations, bring the theater into the audience, so it really sort of surrounds the people who are coming to see shows. There's a bit of, when you see proscenium, nothing wrong with proscenium theater. I mean, that's mostly what Broadway is. There's something a bit safe of things sort of being two-dimensional and up in this box. And I think what we can do is we can actually... do things in the round, in the thrust. We can do alley seating. We can change the space in many different ways to sort of suit whatever show we're trying to do. And I think that's a really exciting way to view theater. My hope is that every time you walk into that space, that it's a different configuration. And we're the only theater really that can do that. So I feel like that's what's going to set us apart from other theaters in the community.
You also mentioned that you spent some time here. You've kind of gotten to start to know some people here. Have you started to get a sense of maybe, for lack of a better phrase, what the entertainment climate is here, the kind of values that people are looking for in the productions that you're going to be bringing?
Well, you never know. I've worked at a lot of different theaters, both as an actor and as a director, and every sort of town, every sort of theater has its own want for whatever you program. I didn't know exactly. And so, but what I looked at the history of what Red House had done in the past, and also some of the things that I in talking to some of the people who, some of the board members and people who have been coming to Red House, and sort of looking at sort of what other theaters have been doing in the community. And, you know, I wanted to sort of carry on the tradition a bit of what Red House was sort of a more edgier downtown theater. And even though we moved into this bigger space, I think that there's something about sort of holding on to that in a way. So that when we programmed this coming season, we really wanted to make sure that we were doing things in the spirit of what made Red House what it is now. And I've been sort of very impressed by, like, also you don't know how, and this is what I love about this community is that, you know, we did Almost Maine a few weeks ago, and, you know, it was 21 degrees outside and snow, and we sold out.
Wow.
Yeah. And I'm just like, okay, so weather is not a problem here.
Mm-hmm. No.
No. If it is, you will have cabin fever for sure.
Yeah.
If you let weather bother you in this town. So, brand new artistic director, brand new season. This looks like it could be the most ambitious season in Red House's history. Is that, do you think?
Well, we really wanted it to be a splash. We wanted to start off big. And, you know, I've talked to other artistic directors about how they set their seasons, and I've gotten a lot of advice. And, you know, we really wanted to pick titles that we thought were, obviously, titles that were popular, that people, knew what they were and wanted to come see, but also that it was, you know, that it's, again, sort of fit into the theme of what Red House had done before. And, yes, it's very ambitious. But we just felt like, you know what, you need to be brave, mm-hmm. and we thought this was a brave season, you know, to launch.
I do like the theme that you're working with this year, the exploration of family and how its different forms navigate the spectrum of the American experience. And let's talk a little bit about that with each of the chosen plays. Now, right off the bat, you're going huge. A big open with Pulitzer Prize winner and Tony Award winner Rent. This thing is just a part of American culture.
525,600 minutes, 525,000 moments, oh dear.
How does that fit into the theme of family in your eyes, and how do you feel about starting off the season with something that is going to have huge expectations?
Well, you know, Rent to me is sort of the hair of my time. Like Rent sort of encapsulates a certain time period in American life, in the same way that Hair encapsulated the late 60s, where Vietnam is the backdrop of Hair, the AIDS crisis is the backdrop of Rent. And the thing about what made Rent, you know, because I would have been of that age of those people in Rent. I went through. I knew what it was like to go through the AIDS crisis, and watch my teacher die in college of AIDS. Friends who had HIV and AIDS. So I feel like I went through that whole thing, and I think what separates Rent from other shows like Falsettos or, Normal Heart or other things that would sort of talked about the AIDS crisis, you know, it wasn't just a disease for gay men. It was a disease that was affecting everyone. And so, it was young people, you know, it was people who, and I felt like that was it just made a very powerful statement about what that disease was doing, that it was affecting everyone, and you know, it had a very profound effect on me when I saw it and I knew all those people that were in it originally, and I just feel like it sort of like tells us about a specific time. And how we're going to tell it, I think, and nothing against the Rent Live or how it's been done in the past, but you know, Anytime I do a show and I'm directing it, is that we want to re-look at it, and how does that show? How do we reflect on that show from today?
Yeah, because I was going to ask something that's been in production for a while that people have seen in many different forms, live on television, movies, and in theater. Is there a tug to try to make this something different and a new experience, or do you hold true to the creator's vision?
No, that's what I really want to look at. I feel like, and again, I'm not taking anything away from The Rent Live or any of these other things. I feel like those have all been sort of harkened back to how it was originally done, and you know, you have to every time you do a show, you have to sort of look at it with new eyes and in the context of 2019. And so, to me, I feel like the way the world is right now, the sort of unsteady ground in which the world seems to be in, is very similar to the unsteady ground that they were in at that time period, heading towards the millennium, which everyone was afraid of, and the AIDS crisis, and just the things just not feeling, like I said, the ground not feeling stable. And so I feel like that's there's some similarities to now. And so I feel like and however we do it, I do think that we have to look at it completely fresh and as if it's never been done before.
And so then you're following up Rent with God of Carnage, and I have been in the carnage for about 3 years now, because God of Carnage is about the treacherous nature of parenthood.
Yes.
You're kind of making a shift here, going from something very serious with Rent to more of a lighthearted comedy, but still, just from what I know about it, it feels like we're still dealing with a lot of those tense moments that come with parenthood.
Yes. I mean, God of Carnage is definitely about parenting, but I think it also reflects, you know, the sort of things we put on, especially now in society, of how we put on these layers on top of who we are, and whether that's elitism or whether that's nationalism or populism or something, we sort of pile on these things to define us. And what I think God of Carnage is so excellent about is that once you strip all of that away, the pretense underneath it, we're all just these same human beings just trying to survive and get through life, and whether it's dealing with our spouses or our kids or just these basic animal instincts, and then we just pile on this stuff on top of it to sort of make us more than what we are, you know. But basically, we all boil down to the same DNA and the same wants and needs, and again, you watch all of that crumble throughout the play. So then by the end, it's just these four people that are basically to their basic level, and all that their pretense and all the things on top of it has been stripped away.
This is a new one for me. I'm not familiar with it. So it'll be fresh when I see it. I will have no expectations. Right. For those that may have seen the original on Broadway, and it starred James Gandolfini of Soprano fame, is there a tendency for people to associate that lead character with such a big actor and personality as such? Or,
well, I mean, if they were four stars, it was Hope Davis, Marsha Gay Harden, Jeff Daniels, and James Gandolfini. So it was actually four big, you mm-hmm. know, movie stars mm-hmm. at the time. I think, you know, finding four big personalities, I think, is important for this play. Mm-hmm. You know, and there's a famous scene in the play that when you come see it, that I won't give it away, but you probably know what it is. But there's a moment in this play that's sort of iconic, that involves someone's anxiety overtaking them.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. I'll look forward to that.
And then around holiday times, we're going with a Syracuse Christmas Carol. I only know what I've sort of heard word of mouth, and that's we're taking the traditional Dickens and we're localizing this.
Yes. So this is a brand new musical. I've worked with these writers on another version of Christmas Carol, and I asked them if they would, when I got this job, I said, you know what, I think a Christmas Carol would be a great tradition to start at Red House. And I said, I wonder if there's a way to sort of turn this into a Syracuse version of it. And so I just got the script the other day. That's how new it is. Mm-hmm. That's literally how new it is. And, you know, there's a lot of references to Syracuse. A lot of stuff, even I was like, what? And so, but, you know, I think so certain characters make an appearance that are from Syracuse.
Care to share any?
I know that Rod Serling starts the show.
Okay.
So, you know, so there's that. A certain corrupt mayor may be involved.
Okay.
So, there's definitely some references to Syracuse. The Sibley's building is involved. Like there's a lot of things that mentions of the state fair, you know, things mm-hmm. like that will sort of go through the whole thing. I mean, it is a traditional storytelling of Christmas Carol, but you know, we really wanted it to sort of be a love letter to Syracuse, and after reading it, I was like, okay, there's a lot of jam packed in there, you know. And again, it's, you know, but going off the theme of family, it's like, what's, you know, that's what Scrooge loses his family and then
right.
comes back, and that's what he learns in the end, is when he finally goes to his nephew's house for Christmas dinner.
And then we move to Romeo and Juliet, classic William Shakespeare. Is there anything different about this production from the billion other times it's been produced?
Well, you know, it's when I was thinking about it, you know, Red House has had a tradition of doing Shakespeare. And, you know, I have a really exciting director who's going to take a stab at it. And the first thing we talked about, I said, I don't want this to be like any other Romeo and Juliet. So, and she has promised me that we're going to, you know, figure out a way to tell the story in a very, very different way. Because, right, it's been told many, 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 many different ways. But again, like for every time we do, I don't want to ever do anything at Red House that is the same thing that people have seen before.
Mm-hmm.
It's taking classic stories that we know and then turning them on its head and doing it in a different way. So that's definitely what we're going to aim for. The one thing that we thought was interesting is that we would be opening on, it just so happened we're going to be opening on Valentine's Day. So one of the most romantic stories of all time, even though it's tragic,
mm-hmm.
Will be opening on Valentine's Day of 2020, which is crazy
wow.
to say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then we move to one of my favorite, or probably my all-time favorite playwright, August Wilson, and a production of Fences. That'll be in March and April of 2020. The Fences has been produced here several times. It's a well-known play, but I think it was introduced to people who are not familiar with it through Denzel Washington's or his starring role in the movie, which I think brought the play and August Wilson and his storytelling to new audiences. So what's your vision for Fences at Red House?
Well, you know, we were trying to you know, Fences, one of the obviously, the criteria of the season was, especially the first season, was to try to, try to find really. I didn't want to find obscure things. I didn't want to do too many new things. I really wanted to sort of find some really tried and true, classic American plays that dealt with family. And Fences just kept coming back to mm-hmm. it. And then I was like, well, maybe it's been done too much, you know, that kind of thing. And then, you know, I was talking to some of the people, my associates, and they're like, yeah, but it's one of the great American plays.
It is.
And it's like, how can you not go wrong with one of the great American plays? I mean, I reread it again, and I watched the movie again, and I'm like, it's truly, to me, like it ranks up there with any of the great American plays, Fences, and so I just thought it was an exciting piece for us to do. It felt like it fit in the theme of the season. I have some ideas of how to approach it a bit differently, especially from a director. Of course, I'm not directing it, but finding the right director for it.
Mm-hmm.
To give it a different sort of, because again, I want to look at everything from a different point of view. But, you know, of all the shows that I'm looking forward to the most is this one, because I think it's an exciting play.
And then you guys are going to wrap up the season with Fun Home.
Come to the Fun Home. That's the best old funeral home, baby. The best old Fun Home. Next to Gunster Park, the store, and Beach Creek. The best old Fun Home.
Pulitzer Prize winning drama, 5 Tony Awards, including Best Musical. And when we think about it sort of in that realm of family, if I didn't know that this was the last one for the season, it would feel like the closer for the season, dealing with sort of looking at family a little bit retrospectively. Did you specifically want this to be the one that concluded that season?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, when I didn't know, when I was looking at the season, I knew that I wanted Rent to start the season. I knew Fun Home wanted to end the season. Fun Home, to me, is one of the great musicals of all time. And how it deals with, obviously, family issues, but dealing with dealing with their own sexuality, marital issues. Like, it just feels like it touches the touches on so many things, and it has some of the just a lot of great songs. And when I saw it, I remember seeing it and on Broadway, and I was just blown away by the storytelling and about the, it's so different than any other musical that's ever been done. I also know that this may be the Syracuse premiere of the show, which I think is actually really, really exciting. And a lot of these shows, I was sort of like checking the temperature around not only my staff, but around town, and Fun Home was the one that everyone sort of was like really, really excited about.
Now, this is not one that I'm another one that I'm familiar with, so I'm sure there's some other folks out there like me. So what's the backdrop? What's the synopsis of this play?
Well, it tells the story of a 42-year-old cartoonist who is sort of dealing with the death of her father. And so you see, and she's a lesbian cartoonist based off a real person, and you see her, and you see the sort of story sort of happens in flashbacks, and so there's 3 different versions of her. There's a young Allison, middle Allison, and then there's older Allison, and you sort of see how just the progression of her life and how her father played a part of it. Her father was a closeted gay man dealing with his own sexuality in a world when he couldn't express himself. He was also the owner of a funeral home, which is why it's called Fun Home. Because they all lived and worked at the funeral home, but, and so for him to spin it and make it sound like it was something, he called it the Fun Home, and so the kids called it the Fun Home. And it's sort of just her sort of coming to terms with her father and his closeted sexuality, and his death, and it's not as morbid as it sounds.
Well, it sounds very serious. serious.
It is very serious, but it is. But there's a lot of wonderful, heartwarming moments as well. So it really is an enriching emotional experience.
So we'll be using Equity actors and still using local community actors as well, or in all of the productions?
Yeah, I mean, we're trying to figure all that out now. I mean, yeah, I think that's the plan. I think the Red House has had such a great history of reaching out to the community and having the community be a part of it. And that's something that we definitely want to keep, we don't want to lose that.
In our discussion so far today, you've sort of referenced at times you working with a director or making sure you get the right director. I'm just curious, as artistic director, how involved are you in each of the specific day-to-day preparing or decisions that are made in terms of the direction that each of those shows go in?
Well, I'm going to be directing a few of them. So
okay.
The first season, I really wanted to just be a part of the creation of these shows. For me, I don't want to get in anyone's way. Like, when we hire someone for Fences, or from Romeo and Juliet, you know, I want them to have their own. I mean, I want to work with them if they come to me and ask me, because if we may reconfigure the space, if they say I want to do this in the round, I'm like, great, then we got to figure out how to make it in the round. If you want to do alley seating, you know, I have to help figure that out. But you know, but I also just want to make sure, like, for example, Romeo and Juliet, you know, I talk to the director, I'm like, I really want this to be different. I don't want this to be the same. I want to find our own, and maybe we'll just have those conversations together and trying to figure that out. Again, with some of the other shows like Rent and Fun Home, which I'm directing both of those, that, you know, that's that discussion's with myself, so that's kind of easy. Yeah.
Let's give folks an idea of how they can take advantage of seeing these plays. There are season tickets that can, or season packets that can be purchased, and individual tickets, or what's...
Yeah, you can actually get, we have an early bird special, which is happening right now, and it's $199, and it's available through March 15th. You can get all six shows for $199, including parking, which is great.
That's $199 per ticket.
$199 per ticket.
Right. Okay.
But you get $199. You get all six shows.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
But not a pair of tickets.
No. It's not a pair.
Okay.
$199 per ticket, and you get free parking, and you get a one drink ticket. So you get a drink, parking, and you get to see six shows for $199. And then it's after March 15th. It's going to go up.
So the box office is 315-632-2785, and you can visit www.theredhouse.org for ticket information. Audition information as well. There will be open auditions for each.
Yes, that's
for
right.
Each play, and then they'll be announced when you guys are ready to begin to see actors. And
well, I can announce it now.
Oh, okay.
So we're having auditions March 2nd and April 13th.
Now, how does that work? I show up March 2nd and audition for something specific, or
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, if you go online at theredhouse.org, we'll have the audition information up there for you. You just email, you say, you know, I'd like to be seen for Rent, and then we will send you sides, and then you can come in on March 2nd or April 13th, and you can audition for the role, and then we'll go from there.
I'm going to bring my best Denzel Washington out, man. I'm going for Fences. Well, look, thank you for coming in and talking to us about this exciting season coming up at the Red House. We're really looking forward to it again. Let me just run through the plays real quick. They're going to start with Rent, and then God of Carnage, A Syracuse Christmas Carol, which Kevin is really looking forward to.
I'll be there.
Romeo and Juliet, Fences, and Fun Home.
Hunter Foster, Artistic Director at the Red House Arts Center, thanks so much for stopping by and giving us something to look forward to.
Thank you very much.
That's curtains on this episode of The 315. As always, you can find past episodes at waer.org or in Apple Podcast and Stitcher.
And if you do use a podcast client to access the show, how about leaving a review? It really helps the show reach more Central New York listeners. And don't forget about Facebook. We're there, too, at the 315 CNY. I'm Kevin Claus.
And I'm Joe Lee. Thanks for listening.